It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya! It's a drive home edition of the Rico. As the New York Mets score 14 runs and beat the crap out of the Atlanta Braves on a very somewhat rainy night at Citi Field, a happy night at Citi Field, as the Mets pound the Braves. It was actually one of those nights, they don't happen very often, where there's a lot of good. There's just a lot of good. The first good I'll start with, besides the fact that they won, because I get it, they're 17 games under 500. What does the winning actually mean? But good number one is Zach Thornton. That was great to see. It wasn't perfect. He obviously gave up a run early and then gave up the lead immediately when the Mets gave him that 3-1 lead. He gave up the home run to Ozzie Albies. But here is what Zach Thornton is so awesome at, and I commend him. Freddy Peralta must sit there in awe. Zach Thornton goes deep into games. Think about this, ladies and gentlemen. Zach Thornton has this season had more starts in which he's gotten outs in the seventh inning than Freddy Peralta has. Freddy has done it once. He threw the seven-inning performance. The rest of his quote-unquote longer performance were six-inning gems. Zach Thornton now, for the second time in his Met career, and I think it's back-to-back starts, if memory serves correct, got outs in the seventh inning. And here's what's nuts about it. Not only is Zach Thornton going deeper into games, but Zach Thornton could probably go even longer into said games, but the Mets are obviously very conservative with his pitch count. So it was great to see Zach Thornton dealing. Now, a couple of things. I am in the parking lot at Citi Field, waiting very patiently to leave. Let me also say this. I do the Rico Bronya drive home in a very safe way. My son is with me. Everything is hooked up, and then I drive. It's like I'm on a Bluetooth device when you're talking to some. Oh, my God. Is that guy wearing a Chris Donalds jersey? Holy crap. Chris Donalds was a prospect like, no, I was wrong. But it's close. It was a Bobby Bonilla jersey. So not quite Chris Donalds. Chris Donalds was a left-hand hitting, I think, third baseman who was on the Mets in the early 90s, and they lost him in the expansion draft to the Florida Marlins. I could have sworn I saw it. No one is directing traffic, so I got to make sure I don't run anybody over. They are taking a lot of the movie set out because today, and they made this announcement if you were at the game, if you weren't, I'm not sure if they mentioned it on TV, but they announced to the crowd about 20 minutes before the game that they were filming yet again that movie, the Catch movie, whatever the heck it's called. I think it's called The Catch. I think I got it right. With that actress, Emma Watson. No, I think I got that wrong. Emma, whatever.
Stone.
Oh, you're Stone. I can't hear you, Hoff. Whatever you're saying, I believe. See, I again, no headphones, because that would be dangerous when you're driving. So that's why I can't communicate with Hoff. I did that one time, and I realized that was not the safest thing in the world. So they announced to the crowd, hey, guys, we're going to film this movie. You may be in the movie, basically telling the crowd that there could be some B-roll feeding the crowd. And I saw at one point in the outfield, they had like the camera lights set up and they were filming something in the stands in center field. I got to admit, I'm fully invested in seeing this movie. I think the concept is sort of interesting. If you haven't heard it, apparently the Emma actress interferes with a baseball and becomes like the villain of New York sports, which is crazy. And then I guess falls in love with a Met player, a fictitious Met player, and it's a Romo, a romantic comedy. But I love romantic comedies. We haven't had a good baseball movie in a while. And the fact that they've been filming it at Citi Field and we know about it, I'm in. Like, Jet, do you want to see that movie?
Yeah.
Even if it's about a boy and a girl falling in love?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm up for it. So they did announce that they were filming it, and I saw them doing something in center field. And as I was pulling out of the lot, I am now successfully out of the parking lot. You could see that they were carrying out like big cameras, and I don't think it was your typical "we're filming a baseball game" cameras. So man, they're doing work on this movie. And if they include this game, if this game is a part of the movie, well, then I guess there's a new reason for Juan Soto to hate Francisco Lindor, because Francisco Lindor stole the show. Let's be honest. If they were looking to take some B-roll or some film from the game that they were filming at Citi Field, Francisco Lindor gave us a little bit of a show. What a performance by Lindor. He hits the two home runs. He almost hit a home run at the beginning of this game. That was a triple. It was a really, weird kind of sequence for Lindor because that first inning triple, it appeared, and I'm sure if you watch the game on TV, you got a better angle of this, but it looked like Ronald Acuna thought it was a home run and sort of gave up on the play. And AJ Ewing had given up on the play, I guess, thinking it was a home run. So Ewing had to pick up steam. Luckily, he was able to. And Ewing was able to score. Lindor was able to get to third base. And it was a triple. It was not a home run. And then the home run he does hit, which was crazy, looks like a home run. They review it. At first glance, it hits the top of the fence. So I'm like, damn, I think this is going to be a ground rule double. But then you clearly can see it hits a fan. So it was almost like art imitating life or life imitating art in that they're doing this movie about fan interference. And we almost had fan interference. But Francisco Lindor with just an awesome performance. And I'll say this because I'm used to hearing crap like this and I'm going to nip it in the butt before it becomes a thing. If Francisco Lindor has a big second half, and he has certainly been hot over the last couple of days, and this was a really good individual performance by Lindor when you look at the home runs, you look at the triple, I mean, just all around a great game by Lindor. I don't think it's fair or wise to shortchange it by saying, well, the team sucks, it doesn't matter. Like, if Lindor was struggling and continued to struggle, and never turns a season around and puts together some of the worst stats of his career, those same people that would be bitching that the stats are meaningless would then be saying, Lindor is finished, he's cooked. This is why you have to get rid of him. So we just need to be fair about this. I get that the Mets are buried. I think we all realize they're not going on some kind of crazy run right now. He is trying to play baseball. I am not going to hold good performances against him because the season is out of reach. This was for Lindor, and we'll always remember it this way. It was unfortunate. Like, he got hurt at the wrong time. He took a while to get going. He's obviously getting going now offensively. I'd like to see the defense solid as well. That has not been great, and I think that would kind of calm some of the concerns that Lindor is just washed as a ball player. But I am not going to look at his August and September, assuming he has a big August and September and stays on the field. I can't shortchange it because the team is buried. I don't think that's the way baseball works, like honestly. Now, when we evaluate 2026 and we talk about why things went badly, of course it's going to be fair to say that Lindor, A, being hurt and then B, underperforming for a period of time was a big part of why they failed. I'm not disputing that at all. That's a big part of things. When you think of like 2023 and why 23 went bad, fair or not, you look at the way Alonso and Lindor played in that month of May, and it's a big reason why they were never able to get out of that hole and they ended up selling players off. So it's not to say let's ignore it, but I don't want to play this game. And I think some people are because, well, we have agendas, I guess, to dismiss Lindor playing well by saying, well, it doesn't count. The team sucks. These guys are going out there and they're going to try to win games. That's the bottom line. And I think it's crazy to shortchange performances because of where this team is in the standings. I want to see Lindor play well. And by the way, there's two reasons for that. Number one, it's good. He's on our team. I want to have encouragement going into a potential 2027 season that see Lindor isn't cooked. And then number two, and I'm not against it, if he enhances his value to the point where now the trade market is robust for him, sure. Like, I've made this pretty clear here on the Rico. I'm not against any idea or any thought of trading him. I'm against the idea of trading him when he's got an immovable contract and doesn't have a lot of value. That, to me, is where it doesn't make sense. That's where I think it would be stupid. Dumping Lindor as a distressed asset is stupid. Lindor has a huge second half. And all of a sudden in the offseason, whenever baseball comes back from its work stoppage, he's got value and now you're getting good offers for him. Fine, let's talk, let's have a conversation. But Lindor was great. Wonderful performance by him. AJ Ewing, remember AJ Ewing? I said this on the last Rico if you missed it. AJ Ewing was the front runner to be the net negative in the series against Los Angeles. He had a very rough Friday and a very rough Saturday. He had a good game on Sunday. Kind of saved him from that distinction. And then today he set the tone for the game. Obviously leads off the bottom of the first inning with a base hit right after the Mets went down 1-0, setting up to score the tying run on the Lindor triple. He was on base a bunch of other times. He stole a base And again, the Mets asking A.J. Ewing to play a different outfield position. We've seen him a lot in center. We've seen him a lot recently in left field. But today, as the Mets decided to give Carter, go ahead. Oh, thank you. The Mets, I don't know who had the yield on that one. I think that person had the yield. Oh, no, I had the yield. And they've been very, very nice to me. So I always appreciate a nice driver. Very rare to see in New York City. About to get on the Whitestone Expressway and head home. And luckily, there's no traffic. Usually I take service roads. But here's the dangerous thing about the service roads. I'm going to do a public service announcement about the service roads right near the Whitestone Expressway. As my car just warned me, there's a camera nearby. And that's good. Because I have this feature on the car I'm driving that says, hey, there are cameras at this red light or there are speed traps. I have gotten, and I think I'm a good driver. I don't think I speed too often, but apparently I do. Because I've gotten at least, I'd say, 4 or 5 speeding tickets this year on the service road, getting on the Whitestone Expressway right near the Whitestone bowling lanes. Every time. And I don't even believe I'm going that fast. The problem is the speed limit's 25. Well, if there's nobody on the road, you know, you can very easily get to 36. And I'm telling you, the other day on one of these cameras, I got a 36 and a 25. Are you freaking kidding? A 36 and a 25, that's what we're doing now? Mom Donnie really needs the money for the city? I used to say that about Bloomberg. In fact, I think Bloomberg started this whole thing. That was his campaign. Let's just ticket the crap out of New York City. We will make it so ridiculous that we are going to ticket the crap out of New York City. So the truth is, I don't even blame Mom Donnie. I don't even blame de Blasio. I don't blame the other guy, Eric Adams. That's a Michael Bloomberg thing. And by the way, it wasn't a terrible mayor. My only issue with Michael Bloomberg is there's a thing called term limits, and he decided to just eat it. You know, he FDR'd the whole thing, except he was worse than FDR because there were no term limits with FDR. FDR didn't break the rules. He just said, I'm not going to listen to what George Washington did a few hundred years ago. Bloomberg took it to the city council and changed the freaking, what's it called? What I just said, term limits. Anyhow, I digress. What are we talking about again? So overall, great performance by A.J. Ewing. I mean, look, the offense was awesome. Marcus Semien hits another home run. So back-to-back games for him. And who could forget Tyrone Taylor? We saw this last year from Taylor. He had a stretch of games in which he was red hot, and he won a couple of Rico I'm the Man right nows. You would think, and I'm not saying it's going to be a great return, but you would think that Tyrone Taylor would at least fetch you something from a contending team. He is a really solid fourth outfielder. He's a good defender. He can play anywhere in the outfield. And obviously, at least right now, he's red hot offensively. He's capable of getting hot for a couple of weeks. Even our friends, the crosstown rival New York Yankees, the Philadelphia Phillies, I think both teams could use a right-handed bat like Tyrone Taylor. And honestly, trade him. My adage going into this trade deadline is if you are a free agent, I think you have to, if you're David Stearns, just try to get back as much as you can. The great thing about free agency, and I'm not saying the Mets are going to do this with every single guy, but if you like Tyrone Taylor that much, you can trade him and then sign him. There isn't going to be like a crazy free agent market for Taylor going into 2027. So when you trade AJ Minter or Brooks Raley or Tyrone Taylor or Luis Robert Jr. for whatever you can get, and even Clay Holmes, I'm obviously open to working on an extension, but that doesn't seem to be likely, at least according to Clay Holmes. God knows David Stearns doesn't tell us anything. But I would trade everybody who's a free agent at the end of the year, and I think that Taylor continuing to be hot can only help. So I mentioned at the top of this drive home that this Monday night shellacking of the Braves is all good, besides the win, besides Zach Thornton, besides Lindor. That's the good. You know, guys who you hope to trade are only enhancing their value. Oscar Brazoban, same thing. Comes in with one out in the seventh inning. I didn't think there was any reason to pull Zach Thornton, but I'm trying to be conservative about it. Pitch count of only 81. But Oscar Brazoban comes in, boom, does the job. Now, Brazoban isn't a free agent at the end of the year, but the reason when it comes to Brazoban and Weaver, I am very open to trading them, and I've said this a few times, but I'll repeat it, is that I think relievers are just so replaceable and so up and down that if I can get a good return for Oscar Brazoban, who was in the minor leagues a year and a half ago, I got to do it. Same thing for Luke Weaver, who pitched his way out of the Yankee bullpen a year ago. So today, or Monday's game, depending on when you're listening, was very good in terms of helping out the value of individual pitchers. The other thing, and I don't know if I should be frustrated by it or just celebrate it, this is a bad Mets season, no doubt about it. Whatever the win-loss total is, it's going to be incredibly high. How about the fact that we kicked the Braves' ass? How about the fact that through 8 games now, the Mets are 5-3 against Atlanta? This is a franchise for us all the time. We have had so many examples over the years of the Atlanta Braves haunting us. Certainly 2022 is the freshest one with what happened down in Atlanta, where the Mets needed simply one game to win the National League East. Now, it resurrected a little bit in 2024 with the victory in game 161, no doubt. But then you look at last year. Last year, it was like a house of horrors again. And here we are in a lost season in which it feels like the Mets have losing records against, but not against the Atlanta Braves. Now, Jet, are you still up back there, buddy?
Yeah.
All right. What was the comment that you wanted to make about the music? If you didn't hear him, what Jet said was all they do at Citi Field for that 8th inning karaoke is play Party in the USA or Piano Man. So you believe it's a conspiracy that those are the only two songs that ever win the fan vote?
Yeah.
You think it's rigged?
Yeah.
If you had to pick between Piano Man and Party in the USA, which song do you think is a little bit better?
Party in the USA.
Party in the USA. Oh, my God. I got to tell you, Piano Man's overrated. And I like Billy Joel. I'm not sound like I'm anti-Billy Joel, but I think the problem is, to Jet's point, we've heard it so much. And when you hear a song so frequently, you just get sick of it. And I think I've heard Piano Man at Citi Field or Shea Stadium before that basically my entire life. So I'm not disagreeing with you. Now, if you went to the game, you received a Carlos Beltran jersey. We did not. We finally did a good job of not showing up crazy early, walked in at 6:55. And I was surprised. I thought, you know, with the way this season has gone, I know it's the Braves, that there would not be a big crowd. But here's the secret for the New York Mets. I don't think they know the secret, so I'm going to let them know. And I'm not sure if anyone out there who went to the game had the same thought. I know this as a season ticket holder. They have this thing called dynamic pricing. So the games against the Los Angeles Dodgers were more than double the prices for this game on a Monday night against the Atlanta Braves. More than double, which is just absurd. I get the Dodgers have Ohtani. I get they're the LA Dodgers. And I also understand it's the weekend. But it's a baseball game. And I went out of my way. I made this comment the other day on the Rico to only go to one of the Met Dodger games because I thought it was just offensive how much they were charging for those other games. And yet for Mets Braves, like, I'm going to Tuesday's game as well. I got no problem. The price, while certainly not cheap, is reasonable. It's certainly a lot more reasonable than what they charged for the Dodgers. And so that translates sometimes into attendance. This is a Monday night. Monday night is routinely the day that nobody wants to go out. I have seen that my entire life as a season ticket holder. Mondays are always the toughest game to sell because people just went out on the weekend. The last thing they want to do is go out on a Monday. And yet, I didn't see the exact attendance, but I bet you the attendance was at least equal, if not better, for the Monday night against Atlanta than any game on the weekend against the LA Dodgers. And that's all you need to know, because the Mets, like every other professional sports team, they're pigs. I mean, that's the word I'd use. They're pigs. They up the price based on the opponent. So I didn't get the Beltran jersey. That's okay. I love Carlos. I think I have a few at home. But it was a very nice crowd at Citi Field, and we had to deal with the weather. The conditions were a little bit surprising. It started to drizzle. Then it stopped. Then it rained really hard. Then it stopped. Then it rained, and it stopped. So we had to take cover a couple of times. In fact, the Marcus Semien home run is something I did not see. I think that's when you were, you know, bathroom. You know what? It was me in the bathroom. Bottom line was, it was an adventure. And I think what's crazy is I checked the weather. Lately, I don't check the weather. Last couple of years, as I've gotten older, my attitude is, who cares what the weather is? I'm going to wear the same clothes if it rains while I drive in. If it doesn't rain, great. So I haven't been big on checking the weather that much, but before you go to a baseball game, you of course want to check the weather. I didn't see a freaking ounce of rain in the forecast. So when you go to a game and you got no idea it's going to rain, and then there's this huge giant cloud hovering above, and Jet made the comment, "Hey, looks like rain." And little did we know we would be pissed on all night. But it's okay, because the New York Mets put together an all-around really good performance, offense from top to bottom, but most encouraging, Zach Thornton. I do wonder this, just to bring it back to Thornton, is there going to be a moment this season, because Zach is clearly in the rotation and every start he makes will excite us even more about his prospects for the future and the fact that maybe his name in pencil for the 27 rotation can start to become ink. The better he pitches, the more confidence I'd have in saying, hey, that's a guy who should be in the rotation in 2027. But at what point will Andy Green feel comfortable? I don't even want to say pushing him, but allowing him to go past 81 to 85 pitches. Because in this game, he had retired, I think it was six in a row, modestly. Obviously, did a really good job getting a lot of big double plays in this game. One turn by Jared Young, as awkward as it was. One by Bo Bichette. I think another one was a 4-6-3, Simeon Lindor to Young. So he did a really good job of attacking the strike zone, of getting out of jams, because he did put plenty of guys on base. But at what point will Andy Green allow Zach Thornton, with an efficient pitch count, to go further? Because again, his pitch count was 81, and he retired the leadoff hitter in the seventh inning. You can't tell me that he couldn't have finished that seventh inning. So I'm going to tell you I'm not complaining. I am merely asking a question. Andy Green, at what point are you comfortable pushing Zach Thornton just a tad bit more? Santucci, the left-hander we talked about recently, one of the young pitching prospects, was promoted to AAA, so that's good. So I guess there's a chance he could come up and make a start before this season is over. I doubt it. You still have Jonah Tong. You got Jack Weininger. You obviously have Clay Holmes, who may or may not be traded, who is about to return from the injured list. So we'll see what the rotation looks like post-trade deadline. As I sit here today, a week ahead of the deadline, I think Freddie Peralta is a 95% trade rate. I think Minter and Raley are at about 100%. It sounds like with Clay Holmes by the day, it's likelier than not that they're going to trade him. I just hope it's a really good return, because even though you could sign him back, as I mentioned earlier, you could always do that with free agents. You fear that the advantage you have on Clay Holmes, the fact that you converted him to the rotation, that he really likes being here, all the positives that makes this man probably want to stay with the Mets, I think you lose that once you trade him. I think any kind of home field advantage you may think you have in free agency, you're going to lose. You send him to, I don't know where, but you send him wherever, there's a chance he falls in love with that place. So maybe, you ready for this? Maybe the strategy is to send him to a place that is unlikely to re-sign him. So old friends in Milwaukee, maybe Clay Holmes to Milwaukee, where you know they're not going to be able to re-sign him. Maybe that's the route you take. Either way, we'll get more and more as the days goes on. But good victory, back-to-back wins for the Mets, beating the Dodgers, and now pounding the Atlanta Braves 14-3 on a rainy night at Citi Field. Thank you very much for hanging out with us on one of the Drive Home editions of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.